You say people don't believe in zombie takeout anymore. Well, damn them. You're with me, Max. We'll give them back their zombie takeout.
Welcome to episode 161 of Zombie Take
Takeout,
the B Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got a little bit of listener submitted. William Hewling sent us an email in reference to last week's episode, specifically when I said I couldn't find Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Undead anywhere. And he sent us a link to a site where we can find the movie.
Oh, good.
And he asks us to pay him back with a review of either another Stuart Gordon film or something in the vein of, I'm going to try to pronounce this, Tokusatsu, which I've never heard of. I'll have to look that up.
It's been a while since we've played this game.
Yeah. I would be more than happy to do another Stuart Gordon film.
Not like the Necronomicon.
No, but you know, something else of in his vein, some of the Lovecraft stuff, or we actually have his version of The Black Cat.
Nice.
I think it's The Black, yeah, it's The Black Cat, with Jeffrey Combs, if I can
oh,
find
wow.
it. It was on Netflix, we'll see if I can find that, or there's plenty of other Stuart Gordon we can do. Makes sense that we'd get to another one of his anyway, so.
I'll get my Netflix back shortly. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace, remote control.
And we had a reply on Twitter from Evangeline in reference to the trailer for this week's movie, and she said, great choice. We'll see about that when we get to the review.
Yeah, I know. That always makes me nervous.
And on to some news. One story from Slash Film. Dan Aykroyd's latest Ghostbusters 3 pipe dream is to shoot next year. In an interview with ABC News, Aykroyd said, I feel re-encouraged, reinvigorated by the pages that I've seen. I know that we're expecting half of the screenplay to be completed very soon. It should be under production by the fall and be shooting by the new year. I won't say anything. It's exciting.
Is it exciting?
To him. The Higgs boson and particle theories, gluons and mesons. That really gives us a scientific base in terms of our fictional storytelling to open up another dimension and have something horrible come through. Don't think he understands the physics,
no.
Like, at all.
He's got to lay off the vodka. I think the re-encouragement coincided with the time he looked at his bank account.
Yeah, yeah. He then went on to say, we're going to really put it into ninth gear in this third one.
Fuck.
It's going to be very, very exciting. I've been more encouraged than I ever have been. It sounds real now. We've got a sharp new writer on it. Ivan Reitman is on it, Harold Ramis is on it, I'm on it, and if we can put the catch net on Billy, Bill Murray, and bring him in, it will be wonderful, if he decides to do it. There will always be a hole for him.
They're going to have to pay him massive amounts of money.
Especially given that, well, Reitman and Ramis have actually been working steadily.
Yeah.
I checked IMDb, I was kind of surprised by that. But Murray's career has really been taken off.
Yeah.
He's starting to be taken seriously.
I think he's been taken seriously since Lost in Translation.
Yeah, true.
And that was a while back.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's going to want a lot of money if he agrees. IMDb has Reitman listed as producing, not directing, and says that Sony is looking to start shooting next summer. So it's actually going to happen.
Well, J.J. Abrams is busy, so I don't understand who's directing this. Maybe Reitman's son?
If it was a reboot, Edgar Wright could be interesting.
Doesn't seem like something that his son would do, actually, does it?
Hmm?
Reitman's son.
What has Reitman's son done?
I think he's just done straight-up comedies. I could be wrong.
Okay, I'd have to look into that.
He's, you know, you know, a director in his own right now, you know?
Okay.
Jason Reitman.
Sounds familiar, but I can't think of anything offhand. That's actually a good possibility if Ivan is producing.
He actually
put his son on it.
He directed a few episodes of The Office. He directed Juno.
Oh, that's why his name sounds familiar. Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm. He's a good possibility. And Juno,
thank
a lot of people
smoking,
like Juno.
Thank you for smoking. Young adults.
Uh-huh.
So, he's just done straight-up comedy. So for him to do something, I don't know, it's not really in his wheelhouse, I think.
Well, Ghostbusters is a straight-up comedy. The horror/sci-fi element is very, very thin.
Well, yeah, but it is mostly an effects movie.
Well, true.
And he just,
hasn't done those yet.
Yeah.
But, again, Reitman's producing, so it's a good shit. Good possibility he'll pass the directing onto his son.
Could be.
All right, so on to this week's movie, and it is from 1979, Mad Max, starting a trilogy. We're reviewing all of the Mad Max movies.
Every single one of them.
All three. And, of course...
Hence the trilogy.
And, of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by the MFP Pursuit Special, the most indestructible vehicle in film history.
And also brought to you by Leather Pants. They're not just for village people anymore. All right, so we have our, we have kind of a near future, I guess what would be late 80s, because they said a few years from now.
Okay, yeah, it makes sense.
where apparently things have started to fall apart. Criminal justice-wise, we have some cops who are, I guess they just patrol the highways for hoodlums or whatnot. And there's this man called the Night Rider, who just seemed like a lone whack job who escaped from prison, from what I understand, and went on a tear. And they're chasing him down, and they wind up getting him killed in an accident. I know, spoiler. But anyway, it's the beginning of the movie. That's how the movie opens. We meet our hero, our Mad Max anti-hero. He's an interceptor. The other guys are the patrolmen, the pursuers, and he's the one that tries to meet them head on to end the chase.
Oh, that's what interceptor was. I just thought that was the name of the car.
That's what I was gathering. I mean, he was ahead and they were behind.
It makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah. It turns out this guy just isn't some lone nut job, but kind of a cultish folk hero when you finally meet the real bad guys of the movie.
Mm.
And they are honoring the memory of the Knight Rider, which I don't know. It just seemed like if you wanted to do that, there were more realistic ways of introducing that. It just kind of seemed like something tacked on. Anyway, a bunch of coincidences abound where, they run into the same guys and his partner, meets a pretty untimely ending himself. And they build this entire relationship with Max and his wife. You kind of know where it's going to go, though. I mean, it's quite obvious.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a Western.
She's not going to see the, a sequel. Better make no plans for Rush Hour 3 for them. Anyway.
It's a Western. He's the man with no name. Or he becomes the man with no name. So
yeah,
you got to kind of take everything away from him.
Right. And so they finally do, after what was a painfully long amount of time, they finally take everything away from him. And that is pretty much when hilarity ensues.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, by then, there's only like 10, 15 minutes of the film.
Yeah. Max doesn't become mad until the last 10 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, I put my notes. This would be like Star Wars if Owen and Beru survive like 2 hours into it.
Yeah.
And just it ends with him, Luke, turning to Obi-Wan going, take me to Alderaan. I'm ready now.
Also, a bit of the... Well, hilarity ensues, obviously.
Yeah, I said hilarity ensues.
A bit of the story that you left out because it's really not referenced at all, and I only know because of IMDb. Or Wikipedia, rather.
Yeah.
the reason for the outbreak in crime and sort of everything falling apart is because the oil reserves are running out.
Yeah, they don't mention that in the movie.
The only reference to it is one scene when Toe Cutter, the main villain, and his boys are stealing oil or gas from a tanker.
Yeah, but that really doesn't suggest that people do that fucking now.
I wouldn't have connected that at all until I read the line on Wikipedia about it. That's what's causing everything to fall apart.
There's no shortage of oil now, but people would steal it if they had a chance.
And also, and I mentioned this on Twitter, on my account, this is sort of the birth of the whole post-apocalyptic desert movie genre. You know, every movie of that vein that we've reviewed, we've joked about calling it Mad Max something in the title, yeah. You know, the title of the episode. And yet it's not post-apocalyptic and doesn't take
not
place in a desert.
Right.
And I think it's actually the next one, Road Warrior, that started all of that, but
right.
Nobody saw this one. When Road Warrior came out and it was called Mad Max 2, I had no idea there was a first one.
I don't even remember them calling it Mad Max 2. I just remember calling it The Road Warrior. And then, oh wow, there's this film that came before this called Mad Max that I knew about maybe a year after I'd seen the first Road Warrior.
Oh wow, I saw it much later. I saw the second two. I saw Road Warrior and Thunderdome sometime in the 80s. Probably on VHS or some kind of free preview weekend on, you know, one of the pay channels. Didn't see Mad Max till the mid to late 90s, I'm going to say, maybe even
oh,
in
wow.
the 2000s. It was very recent that I first saw this.
Well, yeah, I was such a fan of the second one that I was like, oh, God, you know, got to see this.
I was very surprised by it.
Yeah,
again,
same
here. Because it has nothing to do with the two that came. Well, I mean, there's a thread, there's Max, but stylistically, it's nothing like the next two movies.
Right, it's definitely a letdown if you've seen the second one first and then go to this one, because it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, you're expecting the great driving scene. And there were some of that. There were some of the great driving scenes, but it was just, they put a fucking relationship montage in.
See, that's where we disagree. It wasn't a letdown for me. I like this one. It's very big, but that's why I love it. It is a great B movie.
They put a relationship montage in, man.
You gotta take something away from the guy. And it actually reminded me a lot of the relationship montages in the, what's the name of that series? Lethal Weapon movies.
Oh, yeah?
Riggs always has some relationship that they kind of feel the need to show briefly before
You're
he goes completely
right,
insane.
They do. But they do it earlier in the film.
Well,
They stretch. I couldn't imagine any Western, any movie where they take it all away from him to wait for the final act.
They had to set everything up, and it wasn't just losing his wife and son.
Well, yeah.
It was the partner being killed, or essentially killed, burned half to death, and the miscarriage of justice, and he's going to quit about halfway through. And that's when they go on the holiday where, you know, the wife and son get killed.
Well, that was just ridiculous, too. Like, okay, I'm going to go on vacation. And then, oh, look, fancy meeting you guys here.
Yeah,
it was just a bit too much of a comedy of errors sort of thing.
And that's what I like about it. I look at it as a B-movie. In fact, the thing I love most are all the car crashes. It approached Blues Brothers comedic.
I wouldn't have minded if they just stuck with that. But then, I mean, he goes on vacation and they happen to be up there too. It was just kind of like, really? Come on, man. Just, I mean, why would he go on vacation? It just didn't make any sense.
He was ordered to. He was going to quit, and his boss said, you know, take a couple of weeks off and, you know, reconsider, but because they were losing people.
But we've seen the Dirty Harry movies. When he gets suspended from the force, Dirty Harry, he doesn't actually go on vacation. He fucking goes after the criminals.
Oh, yeah.
He seeks revenge upon the criminals. He doesn't say, all right, me and the kids are just going to head up to the beach. Oh, fancy meeting the bad guys here.
But also, and this is another thing I liked, they weren't specifically targeting Max.
No,
they targeted Goose, his partner, because he was ready to rip the basically what happened is this couple gets raped by Toe Cutter, the main villain in his gang. And the guy who actually did it goes to trial, and he gets released. Goose.
Worst court scene ever.
Well, we didn't actually see the court scene. We
I
saw
know,
the
exactly.
aftermath where Goose, Max's partner, loses his shit over it and pretty much tries to strangle the guy in the police department, gets held back. And then they go after him for that. Because he kind of targets, he decides to, go after the guy who was let off, and Goose ends up getting burned alive. And you would kind of think that would be a point where Max would go after them.
Right.
But no,
Avenge his partner.
he decides to quit.
He's gonna take a vacation.
Well, no, he doesn't decide to take a vacation at first. He wants to quit the force. And then he's pushed into taking a vacation.
Yeah, funny would be he goes to like some Caribbean island. He's on the beach. Oh, there's that gang again.
I'm not looking for realism in this one. That's where we split. I enjoy this as a beautiful B movie.
They take a cruise and the band, with the steel drums and shit. It's Toe Cutter. Who knew he knew how to play the steel drums?
And speaking of Toe Cutter, I will say one of my favorite villains in movie history.
Not bad, not bad. You know what they reminded me way too much of, though? The Black Widows from the Any Which Way movies.
It's been way too long since I've seen them. I don't actually remember the Black Widows.
A lot of this movie felt like watching. They were an orangutan shy of being an Any Which Way movie. Because I even think there were some of, like, he killed a lot of them in the same way that Clint Eastwood would wreck them. I mean, they wouldn't die in the Any Which Way movies, of course, because it wasn't that kind of movie. But there were just a lot of the same stunts, off the bridge and whatnot, into the, off the road. A lot of the same driving stunts were
Yeah.
used
And
in
in the
this
Blues
movie.
Brothers, which actually I think was a little later, but
I think it was too. In fact, I gotta look up the years for the Any Which Way movies. I think the first one may have been before this,
I think
but
so.
the second one probably was not.
I think that was 80s.
No, it was 1980, the first one.
Oh, so this was first of all of the things that we're comparing it to.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said for it.
There it is, that's true. And it was funny, I said, all this is missing is Ruth Gordon, and then we meet the old lady
Yeah.
with the shotgun.
And I liked her. Because everybody else is afraid of Toe Cutter and his gang. She has the balls to stand up to them with a shotgun.
Well, right, and that's the message of the movie, is that you can't let bullies just
Right.
go unchecked. You have to,
Run them over.
stand, yeah, you have to kill every last motherfucker in the most, craziest way possible.
But they also really didn't show much gore.
No.
They pulled back from a lot of the scenes where people were actually dying and just gave you the idea, which I like.
Yeah, I did too.
Towards the end, when he finally becomes Mad Max and is taking his revenge, he handcuffs one of them to a burning wreck, gas-covered wreck, throws a match on it, and hands him a hacksaw and says, it'll take, what, 15 minutes to cut through the handcuffs, 5 minutes if you're lucky to cut through your leg, and walks away. And you
To
just see
leave
the
him for the
explosion a
sequel,
little bit
of
later.
course.
No idea which he chose.
Right, he could be Stumpy. Which would have been great if they'd had him in the Road Warrior kind of hobbling around.
And I think the big thing that tipped me off that it was a B movie is the music.
Wait, when I saw the credits and it said Brian May, and I was like, wait a minute, the Brian May? And
No.
no, it's not.
Very overdramatic. In fact, the opening theme kind of reminded me of the music from The Big Bus or Airplane. It was kind of that style.
Yeah.
And it's all very dramatic throughout and kind of comical.
Well, you know what really tipped me off, of course, that this was a B movie? They called it the Hall of Justice.
Very superhero.
Really? The Hall of Justice? All it was missing was someone going, meanwhile, in the Hall of Justice. And you know what, surprisingly? It looked like a hall.
It basically was a big room. I don't even know if there was a second level.
Yeah, pretty much.
This was made for, if I recall correctly, 350 grand.
Not bad, but 1980 money, that's or
Yeah.
79 money,
That's
that's
a
pretty
fairly
big.
decent budget.
Yeah.
I think they spent most of it on the cars.
Of course. Pyrotechnics and cars.
Most of which were Ford Falcons. And all just modified to look a little different.
Okay. Well, even like the one that looked like the 57 car with like the fins and all that.
That one I liked. I don't think that was the Falcon. I think that was the one that was a little different.
And of course, you get that scene. The actual horror of the scene is them savaging the car. The rape afterwards is kind of like an after kind of thing. Well,
you
yeah,
only see the after effects of that.
Yeah. We're supposed to be, my God, they're trashing this nice car. Which, realistically, a car that old and a motorcycle? Yeah. Yeah, you know they made those cars back then?
Yeah, pretty much cast iron.
Right. I'd love to see a motorcycle go up against one of those. I mean, just even out running it. You know, good luck a motorcycle catching up to that thing.
Now, you're talking about an actual 57 Chevy in that case.
Yes.
This is possibly the Australian version. Maybe not quite as well made. It seemed like kind of a knockoff.
You're probably right.
But, you know, they crowbar through the roof. You probably couldn't do that with a car today. By hand.
Probably not.
Again, that's why I love it. It's insane. It doesn't make sense, you know? And half of it is car porn.
It just needed to be more of that, man.
Yeah, yeah. Incidentally, which version did you watch? Dubbed or not?
I don't think mine was dubbed.
Did they have Australian accents?
I think so.
Because up until 2000, the only version available in the U.S. was dubbed.
Really?
I think the original dialogue was released in the U.S. in around 2000. I don't know why they had to dub it, because I didn't have any problem understanding the dialogue.
They just thought it was going to gross more if they were American accents.
Maybe. Or I think it was more that they didn't think Americans would be able to understand all the slang.
Oh, Jesus.
Now, George Miller, the director, was a medical doctor in Victoria, Australia, working in an emergency room when he came up with the idea. He saw many injuries and deaths of the typical types depicted in the film and witnessed a lot of car accidents, and also three of his friends were killed in car accidents. And so that's why he decided to make a car movie where a lot of people die. And then tacked on this Western. And it was also inspired by A Boy and His Dog, which I've heard very good things about. Haven't seen it.
I think I've seen that.
From what I understand, Don Johnson is in it, which makes me a little reluctant.
This guy's drinking some weird shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just looking at George Miller's thing. You know, he did the Happy Feet movie, Babe Pig in the City, Witches of Eastwick. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this when we've talked about the new one coming out in the past. Yeah. We've talked about his IMDb, his discography. Or filmography.
Yeah.
The one thing I didn't like about it, and this is going to sound weird, okay. Or not a kiss I didn't like, but it just kind of took me out of it, was, and this sounds weird in a B-movie context, Gibson kind of overacted a bit.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's pretty much a standard Mel Gibson performance, actually.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, but there were a couple of points, particularly when he sees Goose's body, and when he wakes up from a nightmare afterwards, where he does this eye bulge that they zoom in on, and it just was odd.
What's really odd is that he has not grown as an actor since 1979.
Not at all.
You'd think that, you know, you'd kind of hone your craft over the decades somewhat, and he has not.
No. Because he was never hired for his acting.
I guess not, the more you think about it.
Incidentally, Gibson was a complete unknown, of course, at this point. Went to the auditions with his friend and classmate Steve Bisley, who would later land the part of Goose. Gibson went into auditions in poor shape, as the night before he'd gotten into a drunken brawl with three men at a party, resulting in a swollen nose, a broken jawline, and various other bruises. Gibson showed up at the auditions the next day looking like a black and blue pumpkin, in his own words. He didn't expect to get the role, only went to accompany his friend. However, the casting agent liked his look and told Gibson to come back in 2 weeks, telling him, "We need freaks." When Gibson returned, the filmmaker did not recognize him because he'd healed, and he was given the lead role. So he was originally cast as a freak, basically probably one of Toe Cutter's guys.
Right, one of the gang.
And ended up, once he healed, getting the lead role.
Yeah, this is only like his second movie, feature-length movie, really.
And there were a couple of things that defied not just logic like a lot of the movie does, but kind of defied reality. There's a scene in the very beginning when they're going after Knight Rider, where the two cops who you see at the very beginning of the movie, the thin one and the fat one,
yeah,
they get into a near miss, and they're trying to intercept Knight Rider, and the car spins around. And the cars never touch. It's a near miss, and they just kind of get turned around. And yet, when they cut back to them, the hood is practically ripped off, and the back of the car is completely dented in. There was no impact.
No. There a lot of consistency problems, I felt.
And another point I liked, and this just makes no sense, unless I misheard it. When the doctor's listing Jesse, his wife's injuries, he said, left neck of femur, which makes no actual sense, because the femur is the thigh bone, if I recall correctly. And I may have misheard it, or it might be some kind of slang, but I just got a kick out of that. Or it could have just been a bad caption. I watched it on Amazon VOD, and the caption thing is stuck on.
Can't believe captions.
I think that's what made me realize I understood more than they were giving American audiences credit for, because I didn't need the captions at any point. I understood it. Another thing interesting at the end, he didn't kill Toe Cutter last.
Yeah. In fact, Toe Cutter's death is kind of, because, it's hard to even tell that it's him, because he's got the helmet on, and you just see kind of the bulging eyes.
I had to watch it twice to make sure.
And if you're just watching this in the theater for the first time, I can imagine being like, well, what the fuck happened? And then kind of piecing it together after the fact.
Yeah. He just kind of gets run over by a semi. And the last guy, who was the one who committed the rape that got the whole ball rolling, got the interesting death with the handcuffs. Which I guess makes sense if you look at it in that sense, in terms of he was the one who started the whole thing.
So he plays the Saw game with them?
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to be like more humane than just fucking shooting him.
But you would expect the big bad, the gang leader, to get the final death in the most interesting one.
Right.
Now, something interesting about the cast that I found. I kind of didn't think anyone else in the movie had gone on to anything, because I'd never heard of any of them. Turns out they've all worked very consistently and in some fairly not high profile, not lead roles, obviously, but,
I've seen the one that played Jesse that was in, like, the Wiggles movie or something. Like,
And they've all done some fairly, relatively high profile work, smaller roles. I know I've seen the guy who played Toe Cutter in stuff recently. Farscape he was in, something else that I'm not remembering. I just didn't recognize him or know his name. But it turns out that the guy who played Ziggy, the effectively sheriff in the resort town, went on to actually work as a grip in some very well-known projects, including The Big Lebowski, American Horror Story, and Glee.
Just as like a camera electrical guy?
He's a grip, a key grip more recently. Huh. But I just got a kick out of that he's behind the scenes done some extremely well-known stuff.
Yeah, that's...
I was, like I said, just surprised that they're all, most of them are all still working, and the ones who aren't, the kid played the son, Sprague. He this is all he's done. But the others have all worked up until at least like 94. 95.
You gotta think the kid probably doesn't even remember being in this.
No. And he's like 40 now, and it's... Well, actually, it turns out over there it is kind of a well-known movie. In fact, it's the top-grossing Australian film, holding the Guinness record for most profitable film for decades. And has been credited for further opening the global market to Australian New Wave films. So it's very popular over there, so he may have some claim to fame.
Huh.
They mentioned Australian New Wave films, which I'm not at all familiar with. But that did get me thinking about the style.
Say Crocodile Dundee?
No. I was actually thinking more along the lines of Bad Taste.
Yeah, we're going to get some horrible hate mail from Australia if anyone's listening from there. That was a joke. It was not serious about Crocodile Dundee.
I was thinking, like I said, thinking a bit more about Bad Taste, which this does have a similar feel to.
But he's a Kiwi.
Well, oh, that's right. But it's got that similar, very kind of, let's just go make a movie kind of feel. Not a lot of thought put into it.
Yeah, that is clearly what was going on here.
Which, again, I like. I think I'm pretty much done with my notes.
I'm just trying to imagine, in Star Wars, Owen and Beru get killed, and Obi-Wan says, "Why don't you take a vacation, Luke?" Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do.
On to sequels and remakes.
You think there could be a sequel to this one ever?
Well, there have been two, and there will be one more. Mad Max 2 The Road Warrior in 81. Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Next week?
Yes, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome in 85. In a
two
couple,
weeks from now.
2 weeks from now. I'm not looking forward to that one. And Mad
Hit
Max...
Me a pair.
And Mad Max Fury Road, which is currently in post-production with Tom Hardy playing Max, which will be interesting. Because he can actually act.
I've seen him act live, yeah.
So it'll be interesting, particularly with the same director and a good lead actor.
Accents were kind of a troubling thing for him when I saw him live.
Well, yeah, but he is British, so Australian he can probably pull off.
Yeah, he was kind of doing a southern accent, and it was, it was suspect.
But aside from Bane, I like everything I've seen him in, and I actually, my issues with Bane are probably more Nolan than Hardy, so I'm very interested to see what he does with the role, and to see how Mad Max actually translates nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of all cliche now, lot of it.
And a lot of people won't realize that this series is where a lot of that started.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it'll play or if it'll just get lost. Particularly with only one name behind it, as far as I know.
I think Charlize Theron's
in it. Oh, yeah, she is. I forgot. Couple of names, but Miller, I think, is directing again. So that's not going to help it. You know, if they'd handed it off to a better director. Maybe gone for a reboot instead of yet another sequel.
Hmm.
Anyway, on to Brains.
On to Brains.
Like I said, I really enjoyed it. It is very, very B, and I just kind of accepted that and went with it and didn't expect it to make sense or really follow any rules of logic or reason. So I'm going 4. I definitely recommend seeing it.
It's a pretty... it lost a brain just for the montage alone. That's just an unforgivable sin. The plot structure of having pretty much the apocalypse and the post-apocalyptic movie happen an hour and a half into the movie, or an hour and 15 minutes into the movie.
Well, the apocalypse doesn't happen, but the hero loses his shit.
Him losing his wife was pretty much his apocalypse, because you see nothing else of anything else.
True.
Other part of the world gone mad except for... the police station's kind of in disarray, and they're just walking around in leather pants.
And the actual apocalypse happens between 1 and 2.
Yeah, yeah. So it makes it a pretty dull movie with that not even the good stunt driving can really save from being a 2.
Okay. And what have we learned?
You just need an orangutan to take out and still justice.
And I learned that you don't write off the goose until you see the fox going into the hole. I just love that line. It's one of those nonsensical, B-movie lines that I just got a kick out of.
I was waiting for Maverick and Iceman, personally, but, that was just me.
I've actually never seen that. I tried to avoid Tom Cruise.
What?
I've never seen Top Gun.
How did you grow up in the 1980s and not see Top Gun?
Tom Cruise.
Well, I know, but everybody saw Top Gun, I thought.
Nope.
Wow.
Kind of proud of that, actually.
Wow, that's a shocker. I mean, that was just like, that was required viewing, I think. Being in, conservative Ocean County.
I managed to avoid it. Anyway, until next week when we will be, as we said, reviewing Mad Max 2 The Road Warrior.
I have not seen this in a long time, so I'm wondering if it's going to hold up or not.
Less than a year for me, like I said last time. I revisited the entire trilogy last summer. Anyway, until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, the episode itself, which you've already just listened to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're planning to review. I think... The last one in order is, I want to say Old Boy, maybe one or two after that. You'll also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, let us know via the request form.
Well, we apparently have a request that we have to fulfill.
Well, this one came in through email, but yes. We have two more movies we got to put on the list.
Yeah.
RNG or Undead and something by Stuart Gordon. You'll also find the recommendations list, which I really wanted to put this on. Oh, well. You can also leave us an email, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-CTO1, or for the alphanumerical challenge, 414-368-9861. Till then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
You've seen it, you've heard it, and you're still asking questions.
Something in the vein of I'm going to try to pronounce this. Tokusatsu, which I've never heard of. I'll have to look that up.
It's been a while since we've played this game.